Coaches, welcome to another episode of the Daily Locker Room Podcast. Familiar faces back again this week. Daniel and Ryan are back with us for all things coaching and all things championship. Starting lads in Ulster. Ulster, lads, you're a big fan of Ulster football outside of Connacht and Munster and Leinster. Obviously, you know, Ulster is where the appetite gets wet. Last year, lads, produced some unbelievable games. You know, you think of even the final, Derry and Armagh, the final, you know, the semi-final, obviously Armagh down was a bit of a damn squib, but you were expecting probably a wee bit more than what we expected over the weekend. I actually felt both games were limp. I thought they were poor. Even the occasion, the crowd, there wasn't that sort of same atmosphere. And I think, lads, it's probably worth noting as well, too, maybe before we do talk about the games, the time of the year, and I have to probably agree with McGuinness, it felt like winter football still. You know, we talk to Hedges golfers about winter golf, like, and it sort of felt as if the ground was soft, the weather was cold, like at 6 degrees today, for example, you know, and it just had that feel of nearly an extension of the National League to it, lads, didn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of, I think the provincials are a bit lip service-y now at the moment, you know, just kind of sticking them in there when they can. It's very hard going from the high of, let's say, the league finals and that, to coming down to the low. I know we had a couple of good games last week, but coming down to the low of Dublin Meath, for example, yesterday. And look, as you said, we started with Ulster, but I down in Antrim on Saturday night, there was a bit of a smash and grab available for Antrim if they wanted it, but it was really weak, I have to say. And I would be saying Ulster's most competitive, but I wouldn't let competition get in the way of quality. And like, I know there's a bit of a scuffle and a few bits of intensity here and there, but that doesn't mask over the fact that I think it was a poor game in general. Look, Down got the job done. They're the better team, quite clearly. But like, if Antrim had a small bit more about them, they could have caused a little shock. But there's definitely still, it feels like a bit of a hangover from the league still. That's the way I'd put it, you know.
Yeah, and Ryan, just like Daniel's talking about Down and Antrim there, you know, in the scuffle, just probably go on that, like, you know, before we talk about the game itself, the GAA is a wonderful association, but it's very unique and very rare as well. And I've always found, Ryan, a number of things here in the GAA, right? Warm-ups. You go to a professional sport, a soccer team comes out at 20-3, 25-3, professional soccer team, back in at 5-3, back out at 1:01, straight into kickoff. Rugby teams do the same. We have this culture in GAA warm-up. We come out, we warm up, we go back in, we go back out, we warm up again. Because everyone does it, you know? And then you have the Mayor Fonya situation, obviously, where you had the runner, and I did it myself, and I did it quite well, and I bent the rules more than most people. I remember a bit of stick, I think Tony McAtee or something had said that Sherlock was slow at getting his arse off the field when he was Mayor Fonya for Dublin. And look, we were all bending the rules and all playing the game, right? We're playing within the rules. But I'm actually thinking to myself, why do we need water boys on the far side of the field? Why do we need so many men inside the wire? Why can it not just be the manager and the other manager and everyone else in the stand? You know, and that incident in the Down game, Ryan, at halftime, like, Declan Morgan, the water boy for Down, seemed to get involved with a couple of Antrim players. The extended version of it seems to be where there's a bit of bumping and shoving, and then the Antrim selector obviously dragged him to the ground, and Conor Francis comes in and gets a bit of a jab. Okay, and emotions are high, but you're going off the field. Like, that's surely, Ryan, like, there's no need for all those bodies to be inside the wire, is there really?
No, I don't think so, Stephen. And it is a recipe for disaster. And obviously, then, if you're smart, some guys will use maybe part of their management team to maybe try and ruffle the opposition players. I've seen that happening. Maybe ruffle players that are warming up and down the sideline. If you look at rugby, everyone's in the box up in the stadium. Like, I was even looking at Leinster, La Rochelle at the weekend.
Yeah.
Ron O'Gara, he's sitting up in the box, miles away from the action. So I agree. It's something they're going to have to look at. It's an amateur sport at the end of the day, and these are probably things that they will identify at the end of the year and maybe then try and put things in place for next year. Now, the water boy, strictly the rules state that a water boy is no longer allowed to enter the pitch. So obviously that was brought in to stop them incidents that you've mentioned previously. But at halftime, there's too many guys floating around. There's strength and conditioning coaches. There's stats men. And yeah, I suppose on Saturday evening, I have no doubt McEntee probably said, boys, if we can get stuck into Down here, rattle them early doors. They did it, obviously, straight after the parade. But for the GAA as an organisation, they need to probably identify that now and say, okay, moving forward, do we need 6, 7, 8 boys all around, hanging around, you know, at half-time or hanging around before the game? What actually is their purpose?
Yeah, I really don't see the purpose in a lot of these boys that are involved in management teams, to be honest. But look, Ledge, that's a story for another day. Ledge, going on to the game itself, Ryan talked about the parade, and you sort of think, you know, the parade itself, boy, you know, you've seen 4 or 5 Antrim players surrounding Owen Murdoch and pushing and shoving, and you were thinking, right, here's the fireworks. And then the first couple of kickouts down drop off, and it nearly sets the tone, Ledge, for a passive performance, doesn't it? Like if you're coming in as a real, you've talked about it before, Ledge, like a press will give you intensity, it'll give you energy, it'll make it into a contest. I know Mean is big into, you know, pressing kickouts. He was looking for Derry. Obviously, Down favoured a more cautious approach last year. They're worried about their size, which is understandable. You play to your strengths. But I think when they started to drop off, Ledge, it gave Antrim that wee bit of confidence, hold the ball. Ledge, we always talked about it when you're the underdog. If you have the ball for a long period of time, you grow into the game. And it probably allowed Antrim to grow into the game.
Yeah, it did. You're right. Like, look, I think it was very clear Antrim kind of came with the idea of get stuck into them early. And ironically, it actually cost them more than it did anything good for them, because like that black card that I think it was Nahan got it after maybe 10 minutes or that for blatant third man tackle. It was real silly stuff, and it knocked them down 14 for 10 minutes. And some of their tackling was stupidly overly aggressive. You know, I'm all for a bit of aggression and getting good contact on, but there was some silly stuff really, and it was a bit boot biting bollocks management to start, you know. And look, I think, well, there's a couple of things. I think Down actually probably did the right thing in a sense that you look at teams that were in league finals that struggled. You know, Westmeath struggled with Wicklow. I mean, there's a definite hangover there. Even after Leash, after winning, they awfully knocked them around the place. And Leitrim after getting to a final. So there is an element of post-league finals that there might be a bit of a hangover. But what I will say was, Down could get away with it against Antrim, because ultimately Antrim had no attacking platform really. I thought they were really quite limited. They obviously came to set out their stall that we're going to stay competitive, and that's absolutely well and good. And listen, I'd have probably done the same. You know, there is a gap between the two teams. I think Down were the better team, but Down can't afford to do that probably against anyone else they're going to meet this year. Like, I mean, they were just lucky that Antrim were poor. And it was a poor game. I think you had two teams that Antrim were just going to try and negate any space that Down would get into. And I don't think Down were going to fall into the mistake of trying to run down too many blind alleys and risk turnovers. So it's, yeah, I wasn't wildly impressed with it, but I think Down will take it during the next round without too much fuss.
Yeah. And Ryan, I suppose my biggest thing with Down after the league final was they don't have a plan B. I still don't see a secondary game. I see the running game. I see the hard runners, the strike runners. I see through the hands, you know, aggressive running coming off the sidelines. It's all very predictable. I'd love to see a kicking game. I watched Armagh. They can kick the ball. You watch Dublin. They can kick the ball. Now, obviously, Down are a few tiers below this, but I think for them to really progress, they do need that kicking game. And then the flip side of it is, Ryan, as well, they probably don't have that primary ball winner inside. Pat Havern is probably a prime example of a strong athletic boy who can win his own ball, but tends to favour him out the field. Is it a case of, you know, they need maybe more of a presence inside to win that ball, that primary ball? Because the four or five occasions in the first half they did kick the ball, it became a contest, and Antrim won most of them, right?
Yeah, I agree, Stephen, 100% there. Down's template throughout the league was Pat Havern probably playing a full forward. Then they come to a championship game and Pat Havern all of a sudden is brought out the pitch before he was taken off, and Barry O'Hagan, who's seen no game time in the league, was their focal point up top. So I suppose if you're looking at that from the outside, you're saying they're still not too sure who is their focal point inside, and we're now hit championship time. You compare that to Derry and, you know, Dublin, these teams, they already have a settled team with structure where they have their focal point, they have their wing players, etc. Or Murdoch, they tried him at times inside. But you talked about before, Down lack physicality around that middle third. So
They nearly need three Owen Murdoch. They need one in the middle, one at 11 and one at 14.
100%. So playing Owen Murdoch inside might sound like a good idea as a ball winner. But then further down the line, like if they come up against Armagh now next day, or Murdoch inside, Armagh will dominate them in the middle third. So I feel that still they're at a stage now where we've hit championship and they still don't know what is their style of play. They've maybe identified that they do need a kicking game. But Barry O'Hagan was thrown in there the other day, and realistically, did it work? I don't think so.
Yeah, and Ledge, probably from a coaching perspective, you know, Laverty's been there 2 years, and he talked in the interview after the game, you know, they're still at the start of their journey, which probably, you know, 2 years is not the start of the journey. You know, it's probably the middle of the journey. But probably bringing in a new coach this year as well, who's come in with his own ideas. You know yourself, Ledge, like year one is you set the foundations, you know, you build from there, and then year two, you're trying to develop on that. So I always felt it was year one, get your defensive structure right. Year two, build your offensive platform, you know, add in your set plays, etc. And, you know, people are in sync with what's happening. Is there a case, maybe, lads, that they're maybe caught in a bit of a hybrid system at the minute, where last year it was very identifiable what they're doing this year, you know, with the added, and, you know, obviously the quality that Mean has brought as well from a coaching perspective, the players rate him very highly from the players I've been speaking to, but it surely just maybe just means you're starting nearly again with a new coach, aren't you? Like,
yeah, and maybe that was a reaction to that Celtic Cup final, that Laverty felt we actually do need a totally different approach here. And so you could, as you said, this could be in theory year one, you know. It's funny, even from a coaching point of view, sometimes, you know yourself, you could be working on something. Let's say year one you work defensively, and you think then players have that nailed down, they get it, you don't have to keep reinforcing it. But sometimes it can go out of the head. If it's not being done in training on a regular basis, sometimes the foundations you think you have kind of go out the window a little bit. So let's say Mina comes in this year and everything is new, everything is different. Any kind of platform that was there from year one, that could be gone out of the heads by this stage. So it could be very much so a case of it being year one. The thing I can see with Down is we talk about having the same players. Like, you put Barry O'Hagan in there, like he's the same type of forward. He's the exact same type of forward as the other four or five. They're wiry, they're jinky, they're running into corners. They're like, what Down really, and this goes back to Murdoch, is a pivot to play at 14, who's winning the ball in that D sort of an area, and doesn't necessarily want to turn and burn his man the whole time, doesn't necessarily want to be jinking and dummy solos and hops. He wants to bring other players into the game, and I think that focus would change how Down play. It'll be that extra element we're talking about, because at the moment, everything is, as you say, everything is with runners from wide through the hands. If there was availability of that pivot to win primary ball and be able to get runners coming off him, I think that would change how teams defend, because like most teams are going to be organized defensively, and Antrim are organized defensively. They all want to defend with their facing out. No defenders want to be turning and running back towards their own goal. And I think an awful lot of defensive teams against Down recently have been able to defend in comfortable positions, because they're just putting a little cordon, a square around where Down are attacking from, and it's very hard to break that down. So yeah, I think it's an awful lot of the same type of players, I think, is what Down's problem is for me anyway. And as you said, when you don't have that platform from the middle of the field, like kickouts now either side of the ball are the biggest scoring opportunities for teams. We saw that even with Meade in Dublin yesterday, that Meade got a bit of purchase off Dublin's kickout for a while. Our man Fermanagh, like most of Armagh's energy came from kickouts. If you haven't got a platform to work off kickouts, you're going to really struggle the other side of the field.
Yeah, and the flexibility in attack, Ryan, is the big thing for Down. Like, you know, Daniel talked about similar players. Like, I know, you know, there was a lot of talk about Down on the same trajectory as Derry, Carroll Kane, and a couple of mornings. I completely disagree with that. I watched the Down Club Championship last year, and I would go on record as saying, Ryan, the standard and the quality was extremely poor. You know, Kilcoo were a mile ahead of the pack. They won it in second gear. You look at Derry's forward line, Ryan, just have it here on paper. Ethan Doherty, Kieran McFall, Paddy Cassidy, Niall Loughlin, Shane McGuigan, Lachlan Murray. Like, the flexibility, the strength, the power, they all add something different, that forward line. You know, there's not too many players in that forward line that come in with the same attributes. You know, there's so many different players. Like, even Doherty's, you know, real cut and drive running, coming up the lanes and stuff like that, taking a man on, they're a goal threat. Like, Down just don't have that flexibility in attack. Like, the likes of Sheila Johnson, Ryan Johnson, They're all the similar players. Like, you know, it's all this sort of stand solo, nice wee pop pass go. There's no real substance to it, Ryan. Would you agree? Like,
yeah, I would. I feel them forwards that you've listed out from Derry are, you know, a lot better than Down's forwards, being brutally honest. And that's not taking anything away from them, Down lads. You know, a lot of them obviously have been very successful with their clubs and stuff, but it is a step up when you get up to county level. And you got to have the ability to be able to put the ball over the bar from 35 yards if you're an inter-county forward. I'm not too sure Down have enough players that are able to do that. Now, Down were, some of the shots they even had in that second half against Antrim, I thought were really poor. You know, just maybe wrong decision, or else the players aren't able to execute what they were trying. But you even look at Derry's bench, you know, Cormac Murphy can come on. All of a sudden, every time he gets the ball, he goes at his man. He can take his own score. Niall Toner, go at his man. Like, these are the caliber of players Derry have. So for Cahill O'Kane to be sent Down or on a similar trajectory, I think he's way off on that. Down have everyone available to them now under Laverty. There isn't probably, you know, the Down football inside out. There probably isn't too many players outside of that squad that you're saying he should be involved in the county setup. So in my opinion, this is Down maxing out. They've got everyone yet.
And I think, Ryan, when you talked about the success at club level, I think what separated Kilcoo was their pace. Like, you've played against them, Ryan, you know, at club level, you've come up close against them. I obviously know them very well myself. Like, there's no club team in Down has the pace that they have. They have pace, you know, throughout their team in abundance. Scary pace at times, but the problem at inter-county level, Edge, it's okay at club level having that pace, because if you have three or four boys at that pace at club level, you might have two or three that can match, but you never have three or four. But at inter-county level, Edge, everyone's fast now, you know, everyone's got athleticism, and even watching that Armagh team from a strength and conditioning point of view, like, they look, you know, further down the road than a lot of teams. Like,
yeah, and look, I to be fair to Down, I think we're probably not measuring them like they're not with the Derrys. They're not at that level. Like, they're nowhere near us. They'd be more. They're more akin to the Mead, probably just a step above Antrim at the moment themselves in Fermanagh. That's probably where they're at. And like, ultimately, as you say, look, every inter-county player is going to be strong, fit, and fast at a base level at the moment. Like, you know, that's going to be the basics. And then as you go into Championship, teams are going to set up like Antrim did the other day and not give opportunities to use that pace. You know, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
But no, look, I know that Kara Ken article, he was talking about them trying to develop patterns like Derry, and I still agree. I think they're trying to do it, but I don't think they have the personnel to do it as efficiently as Derry do it, or they won't have the personnel because they haven't got that flexibility in player because they're all so similar. And it's sometimes you have to play to what you have, and I think Down are probably, that's where they're at now at the moment. I don't think they're massively underachieving or anything like that. I think that's probably where they're at the moment.
Yeah, I think I think that the expectation in Down as well is probably just needs to be curbed a wee bit, you know. But look, moving on, I don't think either team will be contesting, you know, the latter stages of Sam anyway. But moving on to Armagh Fermanagh, I know, Ryan, you were at the game. You know, you watched the game closely. 9 different scores for Armagh, like a bit of flexibility there in their scoring power. Obviously, Stephen Campbell, Jordy Ogue, Turbot, Mackin, O'Neill, the two O'Neills, Grugan, Andrew Murren, Barry McCambridge. For me though, Ryan, I felt Rory Grugan was outstanding on the day. I think he's a real proper player. He's got a lot of experience. He's kept himself in very, very good shape. You know, he's got a terrific left foot, you know, and he created that goal out of nothing actually early in the game, just a sidestep, and just having the composure and the real calmness and coolness in front of the goal to make that pass. Like, but for me, Ryan, I think if Armagh can get over Down, which, you know, on paper they should, although Down do come into games as underdogs, they do tend to play better. Armagh could give Ulster a real rattle.
Yeah, Armagh, I know we've been maybe at times a wee bit disappointed with them. Obviously, the league final 2 weeks ago. But maybe, we don't know, maybe Armagh weren't too worried about that league final. There were a different outfit yesterday. Number one, Stephen Campbell and Ryan O'Neill were on the pitch from the start, which I find is a massive difference to that Armagh team. Also, what I would say, Stephen, is Armagh have serious depth now. So if you look at their forward line, like you talked about them there, Grugan, Connaughty, Ryan O'Neill, Steffi Campbell, like Turbot, Andy Murnan, all these boys need marked. Because they're individuals where they can create something out of nothing. So what I thought yesterday was Fermanagh just couldn't deal with their pace and power. Fermanagh's matchups, I don't know honestly who was picking up who. And I like, you know, I know all the Fermanagh lads, they're really honest. Like, I've no doubt they went into that game in the right frame of mind. But I couldn't tell you who was picking up Ryan O'Neill early on. O'Neill was probably just getting back to himself, but he could have had 3 or 4 points so easy. Nobody near him. I couldn't tell you who was on Grugan. So when you're playing against these teams, you got to, I suppose, number one, have your matchups. But that's what makes Armagh so difficult to play against, is that there's so many you have to match up against. And the other thing about them is, Stephen, yesterday, they came with an unbelievable aggression. Like, turned them over. Now, you would be maybe a wee bit critical of Fermanagh. I felt that there was no real structure. Like, everyone knew that if Armagh came with a high squeeze on Fermanagh's kick out, which is always majority of the time short, what was the plan B? They didn't have a plan B. Sean Quigley, I think, was on BBC and he said Armagh have a structure when they're attacking, and Fermanagh didn't look like they had any structure. So when Fermanagh were attacking, Armagh also looked like they were structurally set up for the turnover and the counter-attack. When Armagh were attacking, they looked like they had a structure. Fermanagh, unfortunately, attacking or defending, they were all over the place. Like, even that goal where Steffi Campbell got a tap in at the back post. You know, what was Fermanagh's game plan when they lost the ball, when Armagh maybe did turn them over with that high press? Were they just going to retreat and make sure that it was a tap over point? They looked all over the place. Alton Callum has got abundance of speed, probably the fastest player on the pitch. Fermanagh weren't able to isolate him. At times when he was receiving the ball, there was four and five Armagh players around him. If Armagh were playing with a high squeeze, could you not have tried Alton Callum as a one-on-one inside and kicked the ball over the high press where Callum had the pace to get out in front? Fermanagh didn't try any of these things, so I'm not too sure if they were thinking of plan to put into that game. It didn't look like it.
And it's fascinating too, Ryan, you talked about the aggression Armagh abroad. You know, Leds, they had their homework done on the kickouts. There's no question about that. You know, they went zonal, then they went man-to-man. Even for Fermanagh's bunch and break, you know, they marked zonally, which it surprised me that a lot of inter-county teams don't actually do that. You know, a lot of inter-county teams go man-to-man, which is frightening. And it was produced last night in the Sunday game as some sort of, you know, tactical, you know, explosion of like, wow, you know. But like, it's quite simple. If a team bunch, just mark outside them, you know. But Armagh had their homework done. But also as well, intriguingly enough, they set quite a few traps, Ledge. There's quite a few kickouts that they let Fermanagh have, knowing, having the confidence to say, we're going to strip and rip you here, you know, we're going to rip and strip you here and take the ball off you. And they did that and they got a goal from it, you know, and that was completely strategic. Like, and it shows you as well the thought that goes into coaching now, Daniel, you know, at this level, that, you know, they've looked at Fermanagh, they've probably identified that maybe their full back line at times can be a bit cagey on the ball. They've maybe looked at their goalkeeper. Is it Ross Bogue, Ryan, who likes to be adventurous, Ryan, who likes to come out the field? And the first ball in yesterday was to catch him, because he comes out 15, 20 metres off his line all the time, and it nearly did catch him. But Ledge, the flexibility in coaching now and the thought that goes into coaching is brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I can never understand it when a team goes to a bunch and break. Like, what do you want your pressers to do? You want them to come into the middle and to try to mark you man-to-man. And then you have keeper has 40 yards to the left, 40 yards to the right to chip out.
Whereas somebody like a come in wee screen like basketball and he's out, you know?
It's such an easy out. Like, and, you know, sometimes when you're coaching it, you'd wonder, a lot of your offensive play should be trying to do what you don't want to do defensively, if that makes sense. If you're looking to get out on your own kick out, you go to a spine. You want them to come into the middle to mark you. So then if you know that, why would you not go and play zone on the other side if a team goes into a spine? You know, that sort of way. And there's been an awful lot of, we talked about stupid running before, that some of that man-to-man stuff on kick-out press is ridiculous running because you're burning up so much energy. Armagh yesterday just put a little web around the bunch. And then when they broke out, they were just able to stand there, you know? So it was, I was really impressed with Armagh the first step. Now, I know the wind was heavy, but they looked really aggressive. I thought they had a little extra energy they probably didn't have. And look, let's bring it back to brass tacks. For most of the league, they didn't have Stephen Campbell was in and out, and they didn't have Rian O'Neill. You throw those two players back in, that immediately makes Armagh a better team. I was looking forward to seeing Fermanagh set up really stoutly and see could Armagh break him down, but it never really occurred. Like, you know, you look at the when it was, I think it was a point to no score for the first 10 minutes, or whatever it was, and we go back to we talk about basic skills so often here, and how often do basic skills let you down? Like, the Fermanagh goal chance was huge. No, cornerback gets it. All he has to do is roll that into the corner. They're in the game all of a sudden. The two goal opportunities. Like, Armagh had a bit of a structure defensively, but Fermanagh weren't under wild pressure. There were two goals from a turnover. Like, that's a massive swing. And then even the black card. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, Fermanagh, if they needed it to be a smash and grab, like, but they need to take every opportunity. You've missed an open goal. You've handed Armagh two goals, and you have a black card. I mean, there's no coincidence then that the game was over when the black card came back on. Almost there was 6 or 7 points in it. Like. We Armagh were definitely the better team, don't get me wrong, but I thought Fermanagh's basic errors were cruel, because the three goals were the difference in the game, and Fermanagh should have had one of their own, and I thought two of the goals were handed on plate to Armagh.
Yeah, would you agree with that, Ryan?
I would, Stephen. The basic errors, I suppose, them players have made the basic errors, like Alton Callum maybe one time fumbled the ball. That's not him. He's better than that. So again, you would probably ask the question, what are Fermanagh doing on the coaching ground? You have to, I suppose, prepare for what you're going to be facing. And Armagh bring contact. So Fermanagh, maybe if they're on the training ground avoiding contact, these guys aren't getting used to players getting hands in around them. That's my opinion. I think you're better off saying, boys, there's going to be contact. Get comfortable with it. Get used to being able to ride tackles. Because that's what Armagh was going to bring to the table. Armagh played a man-on-man approach, which meant then that the likes of Alton Callum, if you got the ball to him one-on-one, even in the middle third, great space, get the ball to him one-on-one, because Armagh are pressing up man-on-man, then he can create an overlap by beating his man. But Fermanagh's game plan never allowed that to happen. It looked like there was other, the full back line, as you mentioned, the goalkeeper, they were the guys getting the ball. So I think Fermanagh should have been maybe identifying, if Armagh press, how can we get the likes of Alton Callum on a one-on-one? Because Armagh are going to mark with, they literally went out and pressed them man-to-man. Or the other option for me would have been, can we look up, lads, Paddy Burns was left one-on-one inside for a lot of the game because Armagh were pressing out so high. Can we identify Alton Callum to stay on the full forward line? Play kick passes, lads, over their high press, 35 yards into space. And then all of a sudden, we just need to catch Armagh maybe out once.
And make it a foot race, Ryan, rather than an aerial ball in, because they put a lot of ball in where you know, Paddy Burns was fit to break it. It's 50-50 ball. It's very hard for a forward, but a foot race gives him a chance.
Make it a foot race, or have the management team and Armagh going, Jesus, Alton Callum here is one-on-one with Paddy Burns.
Drop him on the
neck. Aye, Fokker, get back. And let Fermanagh then all of a sudden come out of defence with a plus one. But instead, you know, the Alton Callum, at times when he was getting the ball, there was four and five men around him, and that was all around that middle third chaos. Fermanagh players were running into each other. So they are better than that, but it comes from the training ground for me, Stephen.
Yeah, and the top teams, Ledge, do have that. Like, Armagh have that physical conditioning to go man to man. Like, we're going to move into Leinster now. Like, and like, you look at yesterday's game, Meath and Dublin, you know, the ability to go man to man. Everyone talks about man to man and it's grand, like, but it takes one or two weaknesses in your link, you know, in your chain, and man to man is defunct. Like, to go man to man on a team, like, you need to be confident in your ability physically and conditionally as well to know that, look, we're matching up here. You're man to man. You have a responsibility. But it also lays in the flip side of it as well. Man to man does bring a pressure. And it does bring panic because pressure creates panic. So when you're pressing the team, you know, it does. The further a team goes back to their own goal, as Ryan says, the pressure starts to build. You know, the panic starts to build. You know, and it's definitely, it should be a flick of a switch in a game that teams should be able to flick to that, shouldn't they? At times, to say, right, we're going man to man for a certain period of time.
Yeah, and it does come back to that pace and power element as well. Like, you know, we said after the Dublin Derry game, we mightn't see another game like this because no other teams could afford to go the way both Dublin and Derry went at each other. No other team is good enough to do it because they haven't got that strength, that conditioning, the endurance even to go for a certain period of time. But I think you're right. Like, I think there's definitely an occasion in a game where, as you said, the switch has to be flicked and it changes the scenery for the team with the ball. So, let's say Fermanagh were getting used to getting a couple of short, easy kickouts, like, oh, this is grand, full back line has come to the 45. And then all of a sudden, Armagh change it up and they're going full, hard, high press, man to man. And then you have to try and think in the fly. And as Ryan said, if you don't have something prepared in the training ground for when this happens, well, it's going to be very hard to do that in game. So, like, I definitely think I think you see the top teams are starting to coach this a little bit more where, as you said, they'll be playing in-house game and minute 15, whistle will go and you'll see a changing of tactics. You know, you'll see a team that might have been dropping off for a while will go squeeze or zone along kickouts or whatever it might be. And I think that's a really important element from a coaching point of view, to have teams that are able to in-game change what they're doing. It's that flexibility of tactic that probably not a lot of teams have. Like, let's call a spade a spade. I mean, the thing for Fermanagh that would probably annoy me the most would be, like, I've seen Noel McKellum a few times. Like, he's a phenomenal athlete, a phenomenal player. You should be trying to get your scenario on field to get the best out of him. It never really occurred. Like, I mean, if, as Ryan said, if you put him inside, for example, he'll probably get a defender and he'll get a plus one as well, I would imagine. I don't think Armagh be silly enough to leave him in a one-on-one. All of a sudden, as Ryan said, then you have a plus one out the field and it changes the face of what Armagh are doing. Whereas I thought Armagh dictated the terms for the whole game. Everything was being dictated to by Fermanagh were being dictated by Armagh. And it was, look, and again, Armagh are well ahead of Fermanagh. Let's call a spade, and maybe this is not Fermanagh's be all and end all. You know, there's something more to it. But yeah, I think the ability to be flexible in game is crucial, and you see the best teams are really good at it.
Yeah, and it's a month now, Ryan. You know, I think it's 4 full weeks now to the Tailteann Cup. You know, Fermanagh are relegated, so I assume they're in the Tailteann, aren't they? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's the way.
They're in the Tailteann Cup down, or probably more or less going to be in the Tailteann Cup as well if they don't make an Ulster final. Sorry, and you're sort of thinking to yourself, for these teams, you know, Antrim, Fermanagh, that are out of the Championship, you're sort of thinking, like, it's a long 4 weeks, isn't it? You know, to wait around for a Tailteann Cup. And you're sort of thinking, would that whet the appetite of a player? You know, are we going to lose players to America? Or a young lad's going to say, do you know what? I'm not hanging about for 4 weeks sitting on the back of that. Like, what's the thoughts there?
be honest, it's going to be a tough 4 weeks. For me, Antrim, as disappointing as that game was on Saturday evening, Antrim made a red eye go of it. So in fairness, McEntee can probably pull his boys to one side and say, okay, lads, we'll get five or six of these injuries back in. We'll go after it for the next couple of weeks and we'll make a real go of this Tailteann Cup. As disappointed as Wicklow might have been losing to that game against Kildare, I'm no doubt McConville will be able to gather them boys up again and say, hold on, lads, we're improving here. Those teams
that have had narrow defeats.
Exactly. While the likes of Fermanagh, let's face it, yesterday, that first half, the game was over. So for them lads to, I suppose, lift themselves and get up for a Tailteann Cup, 4 week break, etc., it's definitely going to be a tough place.
Yeah. And Ledge, I suppose, moving into the Tailteann Cup, Wexford lost. Leash are going to be in the Tailteann Cup as well. Meath are going to be in Sam with their league position, I think it is. Isn't that correct? Leinster, obviously Wicklow as well, is going to be in the Tailteann Cup. So, you know, probably going into Leinster, I suppose Kildare, Wicklow was the pick of the games. It was the tightest game of all four. People say, oh, the Leinster Championship's still alive. And I suppose, you know, a Wicklow win at the weekend would have given a wee bit of life to it. Massive chance, Ledge. We've seen the video doing the rounds, you know, of the chance at the end where Kildare the ball turned over. It was a 3-v-1 situation. I seen a photograph this morning of the Wicklow bench just after the miss, and every one of them were just head in the hands. That was the big moment. And it would have been a historic win, Daniel. But from a Kildare point of view, Glenn Ryan said for those couple of seconds, he wasn't thinking what his players were thinking. And he said in his interview, I was just thinking to myself, surely to God, this can't be happening again. These boys don't deserve this. And as much criticism as Kildare have been labelled at them, winning becomes a habit just like losing. And these Kildare players have had that many losses this year and defeats this year. It would have finished a lot of them, Neds, probably.
I think it might have needed to happen to Kildare. I think they might need to hit rock bottom, to be honest with you, so they can kind of start from scratch again. Don't let these one-off games fool you either. Provincials are dead. Leinster's probably actually quite competitive without Dublin, to be fair. You know, there are a lot of teams are on the same level, and Kildare probably are at their level now with Wicklow. I mean, it's not that's probably the reality for a lot of Kildare people. That kind of similar to Down, they probably just need to taper those expectations because it would have been a bit of a smash and grab for Wicklow, but that really, I know in hindsight, that a 2-on-1 Wicklow had, all they had to do was run that ball, they hand pass it over the bar, walk into the net. Like, you know what I mean? Probably shoot from the distance wasn't necessary. But to be fair, fatigue errors last minute, it was worth a go. It would have been a phenomenal finish, you know. But and again, we talked last week about just teams enjoying the occasion. Wicklow went out and played, I thought, quite well from what I saw of it, and it looked like they embraced the occasion, and if they won, it would have been amazing. But I think the provincials are setting teams up for Fermanagh, for example, after the Armagh game, they're going to a month now of just being down themselves. If we just got rid of the provincials, played them as the preseason, teams coming off a competitive league, go straight into whatever competition they're in, whether it's Tailteann or Samogor, it just keeps the momentum. Whereas you have the likes of Carlow, Wexford after getting a beating yesterday, Meade after getting another hammering. Like, the amount of teams that are going in now in a really dark place because of the lopsided provincials, it does nothing for players. It doesn't encourage players to stay. Whereas if you, as I said, play your preseason, where it's a bit of a leveler anyway, you could have your leagues and they feed into your championship then, where players are playing competitively for longer, and then you don't have that month break where, as you said, you could lose players to America, or players might just say, oh, look, this is not worth it. It's for what did it for me yesterday was Dublin almost treating the first round as a pre-season competition. Cloakson came in, was 51 or 60% in these kickouts. He was losing the mind over that, but that they could afford to do that. Mick Fitz can come in after he played against us in the league with Coola a couple of weeks ago, and that's probably a second or third game and a couple of in-house games. I mean, they're able to treat the Leinster as a preseason, and they're right to do it because these lads need games, but that just makes no sense when we're at the tight end of the year where we can't afford to be throwing away weeks to these sort of games. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and even the weather, Ryan, in those championship games, I think Portlaoise yesterday had every season under the sun. You know, there was wind, there was rain, there was sleet, there was snow, there was there was sun, you know, it was everything like, and it didn't really feel like a championship, did it? Like, and with so many games on, Ryan, and at the same time and in the one weekend, like we probably are selling ourselves a bit short in the GAA at the minute, are we?
Yeah, I think so. Like, probably we maybe talked off air. We weren't even too sure what games were actually on different provinces and stuff. And I suppose that probably sums it up. You know, you're kind of maybe focusing your own county, and then you'll wait to the latter rounds of maybe each province before you probably, I suppose, tune in to see what's happening. Next week, obviously, Donegal v Derry. I think that'll be the first major game where people are going, oh, yeah, Ulster's kicking off here. But for me, like, I just think that the underdogs, like even the conditions you were talking about yesterday, I know we're playing now in April time, but them conditions should suit an underdog. The likes of Wexford were playing Louth. You know, it was raining. It was maybe the pitch wasn't in great condition. Wexford had a good league campaign, albeit they didn't get promoted. So them teams have got to make the most of that. You know, while the likes of Louth, they're probably thinking of, further down the line, can we come in now and catch them on the hop? Should have been Wexford's attitude. Wicklow, I suppose, threw it at Kildare. The one thing that they'll be disappointed with, Kevin Feely seemed to be very influential yesterday. And at that last part of the game where Kildare got the winning score, the fist pass, he was completely free to get the shot. Now, it didn't go over the bar, but at that time, he was causing havoc by all accounts. And I've no doubt McConville and Doran, the two extra players on the pitch, they were saying, boys, how the hell did we let Feely free for a shot?
Yeah.
They would have been touch tight on him, forcing Kildare to go back again, two extra men, keep the plus one, squeeze the ball, and eventually then force Kildare back so much that they maybe got another turnover. But yeah, I do think the provincials at the moment, they haven't really got firing, and yeah, everyone's just waiting for this Donegal Derry game on Sunday.
Yeah, on Sunday. And I suppose, Ledge, Ryan mentioned Louth and Wexford there. Louth have sort of slipped under the radar a little bit there too. They've got Kildare in a semi-final. You know, obviously last year, a lot of focus was on Louth because of Mickey Hart and Gavin Devlin. You could see what the coaching that they actually, you can nearly see elements of the coaching still there. I've seen a couple of the scores last night where, you know, they had those sort of hard runners coming off the sideline. They had a bit of depth and attack. Obviously, you throw in the wee bit of stardust with Sam Roy, who's a finisher. Now, Sam Roy wasn't great yesterday. It was actually Kieran Downey from the Newton Blues Club. Like, Kieran Downey's a very, very good footballer. I've been following his progress for Louth over the last couple of weeks. He's some real notable performances, Les. He's a real powerful runner, very direct. Like, Louth have good players, they've good forwards, and they've got big, big, big men. They've serious physicality. Like, and they could possibly, perceivably make another Leinster final, back-to-back Leinster finals. Les retain status in Division Two, hugely successful for them for such a small county.
Yeah. And listen, I'd be going in as favourites, I'd imagine, to that Kildare game. You know, I'd really fancy them. You know, because I think they're in a good place, and like, it's funny, a couple of years ago, like from around our time, 2018, 2017, 2019, I would have considered Loud a bit of a soft touch and kind of didn't really have any direction. But in fairness, as you said, with Devlin and Mickey Hart, they kind of got them all pointed in the one direction, added a little bit of steel to that group. And as we talked about previously, like, Gerard Brennan has probably just let that continue without having to change a whole lot. I think they're a nice team to play. I mean, obviously, the carrot at the end is playing Dublin in the Leinster final, but ultimately I'd say to be very confident of beating Kildare, and any loud person I know always has an air of confidence, whether it's misguided or not, but I think they'll be happy enough. Like, a Leinster final, as you say, retaining status Division 2, that's a really positive season for them, you know. So louder team I actually quite like at the moment, and you know, probably I'd say they're next best nearly in Leinster at the moment.
And awfully, Ryan, won an All-Ireland under-21 three years ago now at this stage. So those lads are 23, 24. Seeing Cormac Egan played at the weekend. He was synonymous for playing full forward with a mullet that time in that team. He was actually playing wing back on Sunday and Saturday against Laois. Laois, you know, probably won Division 4 just in the fact that they've got good footballers, good forwards. You know, I'm not sure that they had an overly, you know, well-organized structure defensively, but you could see a team that awfully that went in, Ryan, they had a plan, you know, they were very structured, the stifled Laois's kicking game and came to the fore, and that'll be huge for awfully to get a game against Dublin at Croke Park, particularly that young group, won't it? It'll bring them on massively.
Yeah, it's actually good to see, Stephen. Obviously, there's a lot of them guys from that under-20 group now are, you know, coming through. Awfully, from the highlights of what I've seen, I was very impressed with their pace and their power. Now, that'd be one thing I would feel Laois lack. It's their kicking game that probably got them through and their natural forwards throughout Division 4. But as you said, once Awfully closed off that avenue, I thought they cut through them at times. You could see runners, and they really exposed Leash's lack of pace. So off lead, they maintained Division 3. I probably would have expected a wee bit more from them. I thought they maybe could have pushed higher up that table. But I suppose maintaining that now and getting that win, that'll build confidence. Is their manager, was it the guy that managed the under-20s a couple of years ago? Is he now the manager this year?
Yes, I think you're right there. Yeah.
So if he can keep that group together, you know, Anton Sullivan didn't play yesterday. I'm not too sure what the story is with him. But keep that young group together, add in a wee bit more experienced players. Offaly are on the right track. What I would say about Louth is Louth probably at the stage where Kildare were 3 or 4 years ago, where Dublin were the dominant force and Kildare were coming and coming and coming. They've overpassed Meath, and I suppose you're expecting Kildare to then really kick on. Louth, I feel, are on that trajectory at the moment, and it'll be interesting to see now if they can close the gap on Dublin when they get to, if they get to a Leinster final.
Well, just on that ledge, Dublin, you know, you briefly talked about it. They started the National League with a couple of defeats, you know, teams coming in flying, obviously, you know, putting all their energy into those first couple of wins. And then they started the motor and built towards a league final. You nearly get the sense of a similar feel to them in the Leinster Championship. They're building. This is Dublin now starting to build towards Sam. Nothing else. You know, the Leinster, they'll win Leinster, but they'll you know, will they even celebrate it? It's hard to know. Like, but they'll win a Leinster Championship, and you know, but their focus and their sole ambition now is just to build towards July. And it's from a coaching perspective, Ledge, and from a conditioning perspective, it's hugely advantageous to have that knowledge, knowing that we're going to do enough here, you know, and we can maybe make 5 or 6 changes and we can bleed some of these lads. And certainly they have a massive advantage over most teams, as do Kerry, Daniel, as do Kerry, you know, in comparison to Derry next week, who go into a mammoth battle against Donegal.
Yeah. Now, look, it makes zero sense, really. Like, and you know, You can throw players into that Dublin setup. Like, for example, I think Killy McGuinness is a good example. He's been on that panel for the last couple of years with Skerries and hasn't got much game time. But this year he started to be drip fed in. So he's had 2 or 3 years of the training, the conditioning with that group, with the culture that the group has. He started to play a couple of games. Now he can be put into Leinster Championship games, like being surrounded by really good players, and he might not play a minute as the year goes on. But he'll have exposure in a very good scenario for 2 years' time, 3 years' time. And Dublin could do that with 4 or 5 years of your younger players, which is consistently keeping that motor going, where you have a couple of players that are coming in every year having a serious volume of work under the belt in a very careful environment, a planned environment. Like, Derry can't go and blood 300 or 420s now against Donegal to again. They just don't have that opportunity, you know. It's a farce, really, the way the whole setup is. I don't, and it's nothing against Dublin or Kerry's or anything else. I don't think they particularly want. I don't think Dublin wanted to have this kind of big block in the middle of the year where there was kind of nothing. Like, you could, they look disinterested at the weekend, as far as I could see. I mean, they were sloppy. They were nowhere near where they were against Derry. Everything was a lower pace. As I said, like the kick of Hoffnessy Cluxton on 60%, like 10 out of 18 or whatever it was, never practically. Everything was flat. The crowd reflected that. Croke Park doesn't help either. Like, I mean, you play 20,000 in Croke Park, it's not ideal. But I just think it's a really demoralising time of year, and especially for teams playing Dublin. Like Ryan talked about Louth kind of are the new Kildare. Well, 2 or 3 years of Louth getting bet in Leinster finals, which ultimately they will, that'll knock those players back up. a nice whack. They'll get sick of it eventually, you know. It leaves me very hollow, to be honest with you, you know.
Yeah, I heard Flynn, obviously Ryan, talking about structures, you know, get your house in order, get your structures in order, looking at all the counties, like, but don't want to go into it because it's nearly like the elephant in the room, like, but even the financial muscle that Dublin have, you know, the advantage of Croke Park, like, there's just so many variables in their favour, Ryan, you know, and Daniel talked about it. And Mark made a very interesting point here last week where he talked about if Mickey Hart wants to win the All-Ireland, he would be safer going out of the Ulster Championship, you know, and it's maybe not a bad thing to say, like, a game against Donegal, a semi-final perceivably against Tyrone, and then a final perceivably against Downer Armagh, and you're sort of thinking, those will be three mammoth battles, like, mammoth battles physically, mentally, emotionally, and then have it a taper and tailor for, you know, a Super 16 or whatever the fuck you want to call this nonsense now, like, but it just seems to be, you know, a real roundabout arse way of the season, you know, no running. And from a coach's perspective, Ryan, like, it's very hard to taper and tailor for this, like, very hard, like.
Yeah, it's just the way the provinces are. And I know some people are saying Ulster is not that competitive, but you have Donegal v Derry this weekend. And to give you an example, Chrissy McCaig, 33, 34 years of age, Chrissy McCaig has to play majority of league games for Derry because they knew from the start of the year, we're playing Donegal and more than likely you're going to be on the likes of a Paddy McBrady. So Chrissy, we need you up to the pace of it because Ulster means so much to Derry. They want to win it. You compare that to Dublin. James McCarthy, nowhere seen throughout the league. James McCarthy can now come into the Dublin team and let's face it, probably operate at about 65% and play the likes of a Meath or play the likes of a Louth, build his way up nicely, and then all of a sudden come All-Ireland semi-final stage, McCarthy is up to peak level. So what I'm saying is you're able to, at 33, 34, kind of just control his load and make sure that he's not overdoing it and build him for one big shot at it come All-Ireland semi-final final. Michael Murphy is another example. Michael Murphy, every day he goes out, it's all or nothing, you know, for him. Every game in Ulster matters. If Murphy was playing for Dublin in the Leinster Championship, I have no doubt Murphy would still be playing county football.
He'd be held back. He'd be held back, or he'd be introduced in the game, or you know.
Yeah, they'd be able to look after him and manage him. But Murphy, obviously, is such a competitor. Ulster means so much. If he was playing this year for Donegal, he would have been held for leather throughout the league, ready for this championship game against Derry on Saturday evening. Which then means that his body has gone through, as you talked about there, three really intense games against the likes of Donegal v Derry. If Derry win that, then they're going to play in Armagh. Then they're going to play, a Tyrone maybe, in Armagh, etc. So I suppose in that way, it shortens players' careers as well, I would say. Cluxton coming back in at 42 years of age yesterday for a stroll in the park. Dan talked about his kickouts weren't on point. Doesn't really matter. You know, I don't think anyone's going to drop him the next day. It's just, look, get a few trainings in. We'll build it accordingly.
I hope you give him a bit of stick today, Lynch, with that.
Oh, I have them all chipped for him. I'm sending to him on VO there now, Noel. He'll know all about it.
Very good, very good. No, lads, listen, another brilliant show. And look, another real intriguing insight from everyone. Obviously, next week, we'll be back next week and we'll be chatting about the clash of the Titans, Donegal and Derry. Just a wee quick sort of preview to it, like just briefly preview to it. Is there a McGuinness Masterclass in the post, Daniel? Is there a McGuinness Masterclass in the post?
It'll be very, very close. It'll be very, very close. Like, Donegal will bring a level of structured madness, I'll call it, you know, where they will be pumped. Like, you know, you can imagine a conversation this week. McGuinness would love nothing more than to knock Derry off the perch, because Derry have, like, coming off a massive fight, Division 1 winners, like, you know, they're in a really good place with the country calling them number 2 probably in the standings. So I think it'll be probably not a shootout. I think it'll be very, very cagey. There'll be a real physical edge, I'd imagine. I can't see it. I'd be surprised. There won't be more than 2 or 3 points in it, but I'd still fancy Derry just because of that quality they have. And look, as Ryan kind of mentioned, they have a team that are kind of well-oiled and almost, they are championship ready at this stage. Donegal have been kind of in and out a little bit, probably not playing at as high a tempo in Division 2 all year. So, look, I'd say Derry by a couple, but I am really looking forward to it. And I don't care if it's a provincial or what it is. I just want to see two teams at a similar level going at each other, you know?
Yeah, and Ryan, it's set up perfectly for McGuinness, isn't it, really? Like, you know, you can just picture, as Led said, he's obviously got a huge background in sports psychology. What Daniel talked about there is right. Like, and from a player perspective, Ryan, like, how much do you believe that as a player? Like, all joking aside, like, cut the bullshit aside, like, when you have a manager saying to you, you know, these fuckers down the road, you know, look at the hype that's been blown up their holes. Like, does that get into you as a player? Like, does that really work for you as a player? Or has it become the stage now where, as a player, you're self-motivated? You know, you get the stage where you hear all the crack about the Kilku boys used to go on the social media and find out names and different things they got of sisters and wife friends and stuff and girlfriends, and you know, they'd be giving it the whole load. But like, really and truly, if you need that to motivate you, like, does it work like
I think, Stephen, to be honest, you know, that stuff, at the end of the day, you need to have every eventuality planned for, and that's what Donegal is going to bring to the table. You know, getting pumped up for that, no doubt Derry will be pumped up for that game as well. So what McGuinness, I think, will bring to the table is what if Derry high presses? Like we talked about Fermanagh the Armagh yesterday. Once Armagh put the high press from Fermanagh's kick out, there was no plan B. I think what McGuinness will bring to the table is he will have every single eventuality planned for. Now, he might not be successful in his plan B, but I think he, all his players are up in Johnston Estate there at the weekend. I've no doubt that they'd have went through every single scenario that Derry could potentially put to them. And it'd be clear in the players' heads what we're going to try to do to, you know, I suppose, get out of that trap that Derry had put on us. So I think it'll be definitely a really good contest. The closer it gets to the game, the more I feel Donegal will be there or thereabouts. Probably on paper, Derry are still favourites, but I feel Donegal are they've a massive chance. And yeah, McGuinness, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes up with a master plan.
And here, by all accounts, you know, Derry after the league final, you know, had partied hard for a few days. Like, not that that would make a difference, because it's important to enjoy those occasions. But then they were away to Portugal, like, and it shows you ledge too as well, like the level of preparation. Remember, we had a run of fundraiser to get one night in the Johnson House, like, and then Turlock would say to you, you can either have your breakfast or your lunch, but you can't have both.
we drank the rest of the winnings.
But on a serious note, it does show the level of preparation that has gone into this game. So it will undoubtedly be an intriguing battle. Looking forward to chatting about it next week. Lads, thanks a million. Enjoy your week. Bye. Thank you.
Cheers, lads.